Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. Franklin Nachman, Assistant City Attorney, registration number 13975. Your Honors, this is an important case from the perspective of administrative law because it tests the ability of a commission or an agency to set aside and rewrite the findings of evidentiary fact and the ability for it to substitute its judgment for an administrative law judge or hearing officer. It's also important from an employment law perspective because it concerns the applicable legal standards governing employer decisions in personnel matters. Because this is an administrative appeal, the standard of review is crucial. As you know, under Section 24.4.105.15 of the Colorado Revised Statutes, the assumption is that the administrative law judge's factual findings are correct. And if there is conflicting testimony, the credibility and weight to be given are within the province of the hearing officer or the administrative law judge. And where credibility is an issue, the findings of the trier of fact are entitled to particular weight, and those come down from the Charns and the Barrett and the Sanchez cases, which we have cited. Now, the party challenging those findings, in this case, it was the commission, has the burden of proving that the findings were against the weight of the evidence. And the courts here have held that the weight of the evidence standard requires something more and better quality evidence than the substantial evidence standard. The reviewing body may weigh the evidence, but it is forbidden from substituting its determination for that of the hearing officer. This standard is more deferential than the substantial evidence standard, and actually requires the agency to discover a clear error in the findings of the hearing officer or the administrative law judge to set them aside. And the commission did not meet that burden in this case. On several occasions, it reversed the administrative law judge's finding on the weight and credibility of testimony and substituted its judgment for the administrative law judge, but only with respect to the city's witnesses and not with respect to Ms. McGovern. It replaced those findings, and I will discuss them a bit, where they said they did it on the basis of inference. And in some cases, it was nothing more than inferences piled on inferences and sheer speculation. And other evidence, it just simply disregarded or dismissed by calling it subjective considerations. And in this respect, it applied the wrong legal standard, and we will discuss that as well. The administrative law judge found, with respect to Ms. Danica Lee's testimony, that there was no evidence that her supervisor, Mr. Robert McDonald, vetoed any choices, or made specific comments as to whether Ms. McGovern should or shouldn't be hired. And she stated, the administrative law judge, and I will quote her directly, Lee's description of her concerns about McGovern is generally corroborated by evidence in the record, unquote. And she concluded that Ms. Lee's concerns about Ms. McGovern's productivity were honestly held both before and after Ms. McGovern applied to be rehired by the city. And after reciting the skills that Ms. Lee sought, the prior experience was not a prerequisite for these three entry-level jobs, and Ms. Lee's familiarity with Ms. McGovern's performance, she concluded, and I will quote her again directly, Lee's testimony in this regard was convincing and persuasive.
Counsel, I am looking at the order reversing the ALJ's initial decision, and on page 2, the commission adds a finding that Lee and Stray were present when McGovern raised the 20 years to retirement limitation during the August 17th interview. Why couldn't Ms. McGovern's own testimony substantiate that additional finding?
Well, there are two problems with that. First of all, the commission used that statement and Mr. McDonald's denial of that to say not only did Ms. Lee and Ms. Strait, were their testimony not credible, with regard to the August decision, but it wasn't even credible with regard to the April decisions, which logically is can't be possible because it occurred several months after the decisions had already been made. And the again, this was a credibility question that even though the these two individuals heard this exchange in August, the administrative law judge, based on their testimony, and the administrative law judge, of course, was present and the commission members were not, that this exchange played no role in their decision-making process. With regard to Ms. Strait, the administrative law judge referenced testimony regarding issues with Ms. McGovern's inspections and inspection reports, noted that Ms. McGovern was a successful but not an exceptional employee. There was evidence that Ms. McGovern's previous supervisor in the childcare area had been demoted and removed from the section. And the administrative law judge concluded that it was possible, certainly possible actually, that some of the reports that Ms. Strait reviewed did not meet appropriate standards. Now, Ms. Strait supervised the person who was chosen, and with regard to the person who was chosen, she testified that she had a supervisor for 2 years. She was an exceptional employee with a great attitude and excellent writing skills. And she was fluent in Spanish, which was important because one third of the child care facilities that were being inspected were run by Spanish-speaking individuals.
Counsel, why was it okay for the ALJ to speculate again? Possible, something's possible. There's not necessarily evidence to substantiate that, but not for the commission to do that.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
You seem to believe that it's appropriate for the ALJ to speculate, but yet you don't believe that the commission has any role in speculating.
No, I don't. I did not say that it was okay for the administrative law judge to speculate. I think her decision was on these issues clear and unequivocal. She based it on the testimony that she heard and the evidence in the record. She didn't have to make any inferences. She based it on the credibility of the witnesses that testified at the hearing. With respect to Ms. Lee, with Ms. Strait, the administrative law judge noted that the person who was chosen was well qualified for the position and that Ms. Strait's stated reason for concern about McGovern was credible. The commission substituted its judgment for these witnesses, essentially accusing them of being dishonest, even though, as I noted, they were not present for the hearing and they were not present when the employees or the applicants were interviewed. As noted, the commission found that it was reasonable to infer that Mr. McDonald had expressed an opinion, even after the administrative law judge said there was no evidence that he did. And the only indirect evidence that they conceded, while there was no direct evidence, the only indirect evidence was the discussion that we previously discussed that happened in August, which I think is hardly probative of age discrimination. The commission also erred by failing to apply the proper legal standards in this case. First of all, it applied the wrong burden of proof. Under age discrimination cases, it's a contention, it was the administrative law judge's conclusion, that the employer took the adverse action because of age and that age was the reason the employer decided to act. That's off the Gross case, a 2009 Supreme Court of the United States case. And it must be a but-for cause or the factor that made a difference. The commission refused to follow that standard, but did not articulate or justify an alternative standard. The Big Old Tires case that was cited from 1997 said the ADEA is helpful in developing a thorough approach for proving intentional discrimination in state employment cases. And that is exactly what the administrative law judge did in this case in a 27-page opinion. And since the Big O Tires case, state and federal cases have unanimously used identical standards both in ADEA cases and Title VII cases. The commission also applied the wrong standard in a failure to hire cases. And the law there is that the employee or prospective employee must come forward with facts showing and quote overwhelming disparity in qualifications, unquote. That's from the Jaramillo case, among others. And the administrative law judge found that the appellant did not, in this case, Ms. McGovern, did not meet the burden for the three food service positions. She found they were not so disparate from her qualifications and achievements as to render the hiring decisions unreasonable, illegitimate, or suspect. For the childcare position, she held that Ms. McGovern has certainly not met her burden of establishing there was an overwhelming disparity in qualifications, and any difference in qualifications did not even come close to suggesting pretext under the applicable standards. It also misapplied the law on subjective considerations. The laws provide that subjective considerations are not per se unlawful. They must play some role. They are reviewed by a case-by-case basis. And pretext will only be inferred when the considerations are entirely subjective. And within the frame of the work of this case, the city considered higher education, training, foreign language skills, work experience, both inside and outside of the agency. It subjected each applicant to the same job-related inquiries into competencies during interviews, which is appropriate. And these included communication skills, ability to think on their feet, which have been held not to be wholly subjective just because they can't be quantified. And in fact, in this case, they were clearly job-related inquiries because the inspectors have to deal with the public on a regular basis. Now, it is true under the Procedures Act that the commission is not bound by the ultimate conclusions of fact, so it could substitute its judgment, but only as long as the conclusions had a reasonable basis in law. That was the Lawley case, but in that case, the Court of Appeals was reversed because it considered only a portion of the record, where here the administrative law judge considered the record as a whole. In Bodagi, or however you pronounce that, another Supreme Court case, the administrative law judge actually concluded that the reasons advanced by the employer were pretextual, but he concluded there was no intentional discrimination, which is clearly distinguishable from this case. This is important from an administrative perspective because, as this court has recently noted, we do not retry cases or rehear evidence. We are constrained by standards of review. The commission's dissatisfaction with the results is not a license to rewrite the administrative law judge's findings and or to misapply the law of age discrimination. And if this decision is upheld, the standard of review will be whatever the agency decides it should be after it rewrites the facts to justify its decision and to apply an erroneous legal standard. It's important from an employment law perspective because the logical conclusion from the result in this case is that the employer should make decisions based on paper. Previous evaluations trump later ones. Seniority trumps all. The result is that employers will interview candidates at their own risk, lest they be accused of taking into account so-called subjective considerations. And for these reasons, the city and county respectfully request that the commission's order be reversed and vacated, and that the administrative law judge's decision be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you. We have about a minute, less than a minute and a half for any rebuttal.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Stacy Worthington. I'm a senior assistant attorney general here appearing on behalf of the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. Also present in the audience is the complainant, Sally McGovern. Your Honor, there are four reasons that are supported by the record and by the administrative law judge's own findings of fact why you should affirm the commission's finding that Denver discriminated against Ms. McGovern on the basis of her age. And those four reasons are, number one, Bob McDonald was the highest ranking person involved in the interview process. He was the division director and supervised Danica Lee and Lisa Strait. He repeatedly asked Sally McGovern how close she was to retirement eligibility and told her on at least two occasions that the city was not going to hire anyone who was less than 20 years from retirement eligibility. That's in seven paragraphs in the ALJ's initial decision.
Counsel, what do we do about the ALJ's finding of evidentiary fact that the process here was that Lee and Strait decided who to hire, not McDonald? He had the kind of the veto power, but they came to him with names that were different than Ms. McGovern, and he simply signed off on it. So given that they didn't say come to him with her name and then he vetoed it, which might make what you just said relevant, it was exactly the opposite situation. It seems to me the ALJ made a credibility finding of evidentiary fact that McDonald, Lee, and Strait did not even discuss the applicant's age.
That was the ALJ's finding of fact, Your Honor.
And that's an evidentiary fact, correct?
Correct.
Based on credibility, correct?
Correct.
So how can that be overturned?
Because, Your Honor, that finding that they never discussed it does not mean that Bob McDonald sat as a silent partner in this selection process. He was an active participant from the very first moment when Ms. McGovern asked to be reinstated to the city, and he orchestrated the selection process in such a way as to work against her.
That's vague. That's pretty vague. You have testimony from Lee and Strait that McDonald never talked to them about this age issue at all in any context, and that was found to be credible.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So if they, the decision makers here, had not even been made aware of this age consideration, why are we even looking at McDonald? Because that's all you got?
No, Your Honor. For a number of reasons. First of all, bear in mind that Ms. Lee and Ms. Strait were also very young women. They were in their mid-30s. Their recommendations were based on people whose personalities, basically, they liked. They found that the successful candidates, also very young women, were good communicators, that they handled themselves well, subjective issues like this.
And objective issues, language, writing ability, past evaluations, past supervisory interactions, that's all objective.
But the latter two were not part of their decision-making process with respect to hiring these women. The point is that Bob McDonald was the one who decided at the outset. He talked with, when Sally McGovern expressed an interest in returning to the city, he told her, I'll have to check and see if I can give you just a courtesy interview and bring you back, or if I have to go through a full process. His testimony at the hearing was he talked to Career Services Authority, which is the city's basically HR department. They told him, you can skip steps in the process. You don't have to make her go through the full application and interview process. But he got back to Sally and said, no, I have to make you go through the full application and interview process. So from the beginning, he rigged it to put her at a disadvantage.
The commission made no finding that the process was rigged. The commission made no finding at all that there was any problem with the process here.
That's correct.
So you're not, so you're
but
relying
that is
on
in the record, and that does support their conclusion that Mr. McDonald was not a silent partner in these, that he was an active participant. Mr. McDonald attended every
interview. What was unfair about the process? How was it rigged?
First of all, that he required her to go through the full application and interview process when that was not necessary, according to the Career Services Authority. Second of all, when the food service inspection jobs were first posted, they were posted as city-only positions. City-only means that they can be, they're open to current city employees or folks who have left in good standing. After Ms. McGovern applied during that first opening, after her interview and the interview of some other candidates, at least one of whom was also in the protected class, the division decided to open it to external candidates as well. They didn't have to do that. They could have hired Ms. McGovern right there, but instead they opened it for external candidates. Again, that was a decision made at the higher levels, and McDonald was involved in that.
Wait. How do we know that? I mean, I want to cite to the record that tells me that.
That Mr. McDonald's testimony in the record.
You don't have a cite to the record for that?
Yes, Mr. McDonald's testimony. At approximately page 240, I believe. I believe it's in my brief, but around page 240.
All right, so what the commission did here was it said, we don't believe Lee and Strait. We're changing the findings of fact. Okay, that's what the commission did here. okay? And now you're here not saying that so much as saying there were problems with the process, which is not what the commission relied on at all. You're changing horses.
What the commission, I think, was concerned about, Your Honor, was not so much that they believe Ms. Strait and Ms. Lee lied, but that they believed that Mr. McDonald lied.
Yeah.
The ALJ found on multiple
The ALJ
of
found
Mr.
that he was
McDonald
not credible,
lied.
But Correct. The ALJ found that Lee and Strait were.
Correct.
Okay, and the commission came back and essentially said they were not.
So no, I don't think that's what the commission
said. I said that I think the commission did. When the commission says that despite their testimony here, when they change the finding of fact, okay, and say that there is an inference can be made that McDonald talked to them about this, that's in direct contradiction to their own testimony that he didn't. And so when the commission makes that finding, it's calling them liars.
The way I see the commission's finding is different from that, Your Honor. This is the way I see it. Mr. McDonald clearly had a stated, obvious bias against Ms. McGovern because she was too old, too close to retirement. Mr. McDonald was not a silent partner in this process. He was present at every interview. He's the one who set forth the process that was going to be followed. That Danica Lee testified that after each interview, the three participants talked about the candidates. He was involved in those discussions. He participated in those discussions. He was an active participant in the selection process.
And
he
the
doesn't have to
counsel,
say.
Counsel, the testimony was that in those discussions, the issue of age never came up. That's a credibility finding of evidentiary fact that the commission overturned based upon what I can see is nothing.
Well, Your Honor, but there are facts in the record that do support the fact that Mr. McDonald was able to insert his bias. He may not have talked to Danica Lee and Lisa Strait about how old any of the candidates were, but he could have said things in these discussions, which they had after the interviews.
Where's the evidence? Like, we have to rely on evidence. You're speculating.
Danica Lee's testimony around pages 140 and 141 talked about the process and how they all discussed it afterwards.
Yes, but she also said they didn't discuss age. They didn't discuss the rule of 75. They didn't discuss needing somebody who's going to be around for 20 years. That's what she said. The ALJ found her credible, and you're saying the commission was perfectly sound in saying, oh, she's lying.
No, Your Honor, here's what I'm saying. The findings of fact by the ALJ, ignore what the commission set aside from those findings of fact.
Well, we can't ignore that. I mean, that's what we're reviewing.
You may review the commission's conclusions and without reference to the findings of fact that they changed, and you will find that the ALJ's findings of fact and the evidence in the record supported the commission's conclusion that the city discriminated against Ms. McGovern. As I said, Bob McDonald has said, I look at this as sort of a reverse cat's paw case. In the cat's paw cases, an underling's bias can be imputed to a superior person. In this case, it was a superior person who had the bias. If he has the bias and he could do whatever it takes to keep somebody from being hired in order to reflect his bias without being explicit to the other people in the decision-making process.
All right, so you're conceding there's nothing explicit that he did to make his bias known. It's just how he set things up.
I'm conceding that there's no evidence in the record that he discussed his bias with Ms. Lee or with Ms. Strait. That is true. But on the other hand, I think this is just the most compelling fact. They hired four people. There were four inspectors hired. And the oldest one of those was 35 years old. She was 20 years away from retirement. Exactly what Bob McDonald had told Sally. Bob told Sally, I'm not hiring. We can't hire anyone who's less than 20 years away from retirement. And by golly, they didn't hire anybody who was less than 20 years away from retirement.
So coincidence equals causation. That's your argument.
It's not coincidence. You have a stated intention not to hire anybody who's less than 20 years from retirement. You have four hires, not one, not two, but four hires, the oldest of which was not within 20 years of retirement. Then you look at the qualifications. Bob McDonald told Sally McGovern, and this is starting at page 260 in the record. of the transcript of the hearing. Bob McDonald called Sally McGovern to tell her she wasn't hired. She was shocked. She asked why. He began spilling off reasons. Those reasons were, well, we were looking for, he said the first thing we were looking for was someone with inspection experience. None of the people that were hired, except for Nicole Hogg, who was hired for the child care unit, had any experience with inspections. He said, it was a really qualified applicant pool. We had people with master's degrees. None of the people that were hired had master's degrees. He said, they're fit for the job. We thought that was important. We were looking for a good fit. Sally McGovern had held that job for over 4.5 years. And in every rate evaluation, she was rated as successful to exceptional. So clearly, she was a good fit for the job. He said, well, we have quite an investment in, you know, we put in a big investment in training, and so we want people who are going to stick around for a while. They had made that investment in Sally McGovern. In fact, her training for the food service unit, the testimony was, takes at least a year. The three people that were hired had zero training, zero experience in doing food service inspections, and would take three people times 1 year of training to get up to the speed that Sally McGovern was at. He said that they wanted to look at how they were, if they were previous employees with the city. Well, how Ms. McGovern was as a previous employer was rated very successful to exceptional by all of the supervisors that she had worked for in the city.
Didn't Ms. McGovern concede in her own testimony before the ALJ that she had been spoken to by her supervisors about productivity concerns?
Ms. McGovern testified, and the ALJ found, that during the evaluation process for the first year that she was in the food service section, her supervisor did not put it in the evaluation, but talked to her about shortening her reports in order to be able to complete more of them in the same given time. And that was a discussion. However, the testimony is also that Sally McGovern worked on that. She worked on tightening up her reports, and that she was improving, her productivity was improving during her remaining time on the job before she resigned. The supervisor, Danica Lee, testified that trainees are not held to the same productivity standard as a long-term employee, and that the average among all inspectors, including the experienced inspectors, was completing 40 to 60 inspections a month. Ms. McGovern, in her first year, her training year, completed 500 inspections, which is higher than the minimum in the average range for all inspectors, including the experienced inspectors.
Ms. Worthington, your opponent has said it is briefing today that the but-for standard applies. Do you agree?
I do not agree, Judge. And the reason is because the but-for standard is a construct of federal law, and it has to do with differences between Title VII and the ADA and the federal ADEA. CADA, the Colorado Anti-Discrimination Act, does not differentiate between the standards that can be applied. And therefore, it has never, the Colorado courts have never applied a but-for standard to claims under CADA, regardless of the basis.
Because I noticed the ALJ used the word but for in her order.
That's correct, she did.
Counsel, on that point, I have a question for you. There's a footnote in the commission's decision here about this particular issue, noting that even though the ALJ articulated this gross standard, says it does not appear that the gross standard was used in the ALJ's analysis. Rather, it appears that the ALJ returned to the analysis used in Big O Tires, which is this burden-shifting approach, which I think actually applies under federal law, too. I think those are apples and oranges, actually. But
correct.
Is that your reading of the ALJ's order, or do you think she did apply a but-for test?
I've gone back and forth on that, Your Honor. I can't see in the analysis how it made a difference. She certainly didn't explicate any reason why the but-for standard changed her conclusion. If I may, Your Honor, under the Administrative Procedures Act 244.106 paren 7, the court must affirm the commission's decision unless it was an abuse of discretion, unsupported by the law, or exceeded its authority. Under the Lawley case, all reasonable doubts about the correctness of the commission's decision must be resolved in the commission's favor. Therefore, since the commission's conclusions, ultimate conclusions that Denver discriminated, are amply supported by the ALJ's own finding, well as by the evidence in the record, and are supported by the law, we would ask that you uphold the commission's decision. Thank you.
First, with respect to the issue of Mr. McDonald, while, and we disagree, but we know what the standard is for evidentiary facts, that he was found not to be credible in some respects, the administrative law judge did find that he was credible, both from his testimony and that from his leading us straight, that he did not discuss any of these supposed issues with retirement or age with them as part of the process.
Where did you testify to that? I remember that Ms. Lee and Strait said that, but I didn't see where Mr. McDonald said that. And
again, I don't have the record in front of me, but
we can check that. Thank you.
Now, there was no rigging of any procedure. In fact, to the contrary, Danica Lee testified that she had worked for the city and she had left and she had to go through the process again. So while the first of all, this seems to be an argument that's never been made before, there's no evidence in the record that would support that this was somehow rigged to reach a certain result. I would also point out that these were the first three positions were entry level, and there was testimony that because they were entry level positions, a lot of the people that applied were young. So there was no surprise there. I don't think there was evidence that it was opened up for more people because Ms. McGovern had previously applied. It appears that I think the evidence was that there were three positions that needed to be filled, so they put it outside of the city. I see my time has, I have 1 second, it says. There's
Counselor.
2013 Act, for whatever it was, and was enacted after this.
Mr. Nachman, your time is up, sir.
It is? Okay. Thank you.
It starts counting again.
The other way.
Zero, so. All right, thank you.
We're sorry, it's the clock. It's not us. We'd love to hear more.
We thank both counsel for your helpful arguments. We will help us.